We continue our learning of the Mishmas David ben Menachem Mishnah Micham Yaakov Bevidichav Zaliyo. We're in Chulin Perek Aleph Mishnah Vav. Kasher ba'para pasul ba'egla. Kasher ba'egla pasul ba'para. Here the Mishnah is telling us that Shechita, which is obviously necessary in order to slaughter the Parah Aduma properly, as we read in Pashas Chukas v'shachat osa lefanav, that very Shechita would disqualify an Egla Arufa. Egla Arufa, which has to be brought, and you find a body between two cities, members of the Sanhedrin measure to the closest city, and of course, once we find the closest city, members of the base end of that city have to bring an Egla, have to bring a calf that has not been worked, bring it down to Nachal Esan, to a rocky area that has been planted, and they have to kill the Egla, v'arufusham es ha'egla banachal. In that wadi, in that valley, that's where they break the back of the neck. Arefa is not Shechita, it's the opposite part, it's the back of the neck. So that which is kosher when it comes to a para, which is Shechita, would be pasul be'egla. Kosher be'egla, that which is kosher, the way to kill an egla from the back of the neck, would be pasul be'para. Then the Mishnah says, kosher ba'kohanim, pasul ba'levim. Kosher ba'levim, pasul ba'kohanim. What does that mean? What do you mean kosher ba'kohanim? We're speaking about an age. A kohen is kosher to begin doing avodah once he has signs of maturity, 13 let's say, and they're kosher to do the avodah their whole life. As long as they don't shake when they stand, there it's acceptable for them to do the avodah. Levim don't begin at 13. Levim begin the avodah at 30. And when does a Levi age out? So when it came to carrying in the Midbar, so that was at 50, because they had to carry it to schlep parts of the Mishkan. When it came to comes to the Beis HaMikdash, it's when their voice becomes defective. They can't sing the way they normally did. So that's maybe later than 50, but nonetheless, you certainly don't have your whole life like you have when it comes to a Kohen. So the Mishnah says here is Kasher Bakohen, and the age that is Kasher for a Kohen, from the age of maturity till the day before they pass away, which is potentially could be kosher, would be pasul ba'levim. A Levi doesn't start at 13, nor does he end at the day before he dies. Yet kosher, but Levi pasul ba'kohanim. What kashrus does a Levi have that a Kohen doesn't? So that's with respect to be a Baal Mum. A Kohen is not able to do the Avoda when he's a Baal Mum. He has the blemishes that are listed in Pashas Emor. But a Levi is able to open and close the gates, is able to sing, even if he has a blemish. In fact, the Rambam says, when we spoke about a Levi becoming pasul when they no longer are able to sing in the Mikdash, that's only for that purpose. But in Hilchos Klei Mikdash Paragimel, he says that they can still open and close the gates as long as they're old enough. It's safe for them to do so, and they're comfortable doing so. Then the Mishnah says, Tohar b'kli cheres, tameh b'chol akelim, tohar b'chol akelim, tameh b'kli cheres. There's a big difference between earthenware vessels and other vessels. The vessels made out of wood and made out of metal, and that is that a kli cheres is not mitame from the outside of the kli. So if someone's tame, or a dead sheretz, a dead mouse, let's say, is touching the outside of a kli cheres, of an earthenware vessel, does not become tame. So tohor b'kli cheres, that which is tohor regarding an earthenware vessel, tame b'chol akelim, will make a regular kli tame. If you touch the outside of a metal kli, the outside of a wood kli, that will become tame. On the other hand, Torah b'chol akelim, tami b'chol cheres. There is a chumrah, a stringency that earthenware vessels have, and that is that a kli cheres is mekabel tuma, not only if something touches the inside of it, but even if something is dangling in the airspace. Let's say a dead mouse, a sheretz, one of the etrotzim, is hanging in the airspace of a kli cheres, the kli cheres becomes tame. Not so when it comes to another kli. So if you have a metal kli or a wood kli, and in the airspace of the kli, there's something tame hanging, doesn't make it tame. So that which is tohor with for other kalim will be tame be kli cheres regarding the airspace. That's based on the pasuk of Vayikra Yud Aleph. V'chol kli cheres asher yipol mehem el tocho, just in the toch, in the airspace of the kli itself. Then the Mishnah says tohor be kli cheres, be kli eitz rather, tame be kli matchos. Here we're contrasting wooden vessels and metal vessels. So what's the difference? So the Mishnah here says like this: that which is tohor, which is not tameh, when it comes to kli eitz, when it comes to wooden vessels, which is if they are flat, Shute kli eitz. So it could be you have a stick and you're using that on a grill, let's say. Maybe not such a great idea, but using it as a kli, using it to put food on it and to eat from it. So that's a kli, but since it's flat, it's not mekabel tuma. That's why schach is kosher schach. We can use bamboo because it's flat. Although it's wood, it's kli eitz. Nonetheless, it's not mekabel tuma because it's flat. So if a kli eitz doesn't have a base kibbel, doesn't have a receptacle, it's not a cup, it's not a bowl, so then it's Torah, it's not mekabel tuma. Yet that very same type of kli, a flat metal kli, like a spit, let's say a metal spit used on the fire, that is mekabel tuma. On the other hand, kli eitz has a chumra, Torah, but kli matzkos, that which is Torah, which when it comes to metal kalim will not be tameh, which is where it's unfinished, will be tameh when it comes to kli eitz. So why should that be? So metal kalim are usually used, are fancier kalim, the more certainly more expensive, and those are used when you're serving guests. So you wouldn't serve a guest with a metal kli that looks like a bowl, but it's still unfinished. You wouldn't do that. A cup, a metal cup that's still unfinished, you wouldn't serve that way. And therefore, since it's unfinished, there's no gemar malacha, and you typically would not use it that way, it's not mekabel tuma. That's with respect to a kli matzchos, to metal kalim, and that's a lenient. As opposed to kli eitz, since wooden kalim are not so expensive anyway, and all you need is a bowl, a cup, whatever it is, it's unfinished, there's still what needs to be done to carve something in, or to sand it down, or something like that, but it's still a kli, so then it doesn't have a gemar malach, it's unfinished, it's mekabel tuma. So that which is tohor by kli matzchos, which is where it's unfinished, it's not mekabel tuma, would be tameh by kli eitz, because kli eitz is mekabel tuma, even when it's unfinished. Then, completely different area of halacha, hachayav bishkedim hamarim, partur v'mesukim. One who's chayav to separate maser from bitter almonds is exempt from separating maaser from sweet almonds. So what is this talking about? So we know, of course, we have to separate trumos and maasros from that which grows in Eretz Yisrael. The maasros go to the Levi. And the Mishnah is telling us that that bitter almonds are only eaten when they're small, before they're ripe, because they're not bitter yet. So when are you chayv to separate maser? Only when they're edible. That means if you have almonds that are marim, shkedim that are marim, and you're chayv to separate maser, that's when they're small, when they're unripe. So that very size of sweet almonds would be potter, because sweet almonds, you wouldn't separate maser when they're small. You wait till they ripen, and they're very sweet. And yet, the other way, hachayiv b'mesukim, so the converse is, that which is subject to separating maser when it comes to mesukim, sweet almonds, which means when they're large, when they're ripe, would be pater b'marim, would be exempt when it comes to bitter almonds. Because the bitter almonds, when they are mature, when they're ripe, they're bitter, and they're not edible. And therefore, they'd be pater. So that which is chayiv and maser by bitter almonds, i.e. when they're small, would be putter by sweet almonds, because sweet almonds, you wait till they get really sweet, wait till they ripen. And that which is chayev by sweet almonds, i.e. when they're big, you'd be putter by bitter almonds, because by the time the bitter almonds are big, they're really so bitter that they are inedible. Perek Aleph, Mishnah Zayin, similar idea. The Mishnah continues to speak about here, temed. What is temed? Temed is where you take water and you soak, it's not real wine, you soak the pits of grapes or skins of grapes or the dregs of the wine in water. So this is what's called temed. Now, is temed considered water or is it considered wine? And we'll see why that's very important, what halachos are relevant for that status. So it depends. If you have temed and there's so much that it absorbed, that liquid, the water absorbed from the parts of the grapes, that the volume is now one-third more than it originally was. Yeah, every three parts of the water you had are now four parts of temed, so that's already significant. That has the status of wine. Our Mishnah is dealing with where it didn't increase that much. Okay, maybe it's a tenth more, a 15th more, whatever, an eighth more, certainly not a third more. So you have water, you mixed it with a little bit of grape skins. Okay, maybe it's a little bit pink. So is that wine or is that water? So the Mishnah says, HaTemet Ad Shalom Hechmetz, before it ferments, so it does not have the status of water. Doesn't have the status of wine. It has the status of water. And since it has the status of water, the following two halachos are applicable to it. Eino nikav bekesef maser. If you have maser sheni coins, I have produce, I have to give maser, I have to bring maser sheni to the Beis HaMikdash to Yerushalayim and eat it there. But it's too much to schlep, I can redeem it onto coins and bring the coins to Yerushalayim. What do I do with those coins? I have to buy food with those coins. Whatever I buy has to have the status of food. The pasuk says, babakar vatzon vayan vashechar, etc. So that's what I had. There's a klal pradu, klal that teaches me what foods I can use that money for. I cannot buy water with that money. So if I have temed, I have this diluted drink, this little bit like wine, but it's not wine, that didn't ferment, therefore it doesn't have the status of wine. You can't use maser sheni money to buy it because it has the status of water. And since it has the status of water, uposel as a mikvah, that will disqualify a mikvah. What's the problem with swallowing a mikvah? It's water. Shouldn't that be good for a mikvah? He was speaking about mayim she'uvin. There's a din derabbanan that if you have 3 log worth, that volume of mayim she'uvin, of drawn water, water that was placed in a kli, in a vessel, that will possibly mikvah, assuming the mikvah doesn't have 40 sa' just yet. And those 3 lug of mayim she'uvin are in the mikvah, they passel the whole mikvah. So if I have this temed, since it still has the status of water because it didn't ferment, you can't use maser sheni money to buy it, and it will passel the mikvah because it's like water, it has the status of water. But mishehichbitz, once it ferments, nikach bekesef maser, you can use maser sheni money to purchase it. They don't passel as a mikvah, nor will it disqualify the mikvah because wine. It does not disqualify mikvah like water does. Water will disqualify with just 3 lugin of mayim shuvin. But wine will have to change the mare, the appearance of the mikvah, in order to make it pink to pass on the mikvah. But just 3 lugin will not. So once temed ferments, it's considered wine, and these halachos are relevant. Ha'akan ha'shutafin. Now we speak about brothers who are partners. So the halacha that we speak about, we learned in Masechet Shkalim, you may not remember that long ago. We're not going to go into the specifics, but we know that at the beginning of Adar, everyone had to give a half shekel to the Beis HaMikdash for the purchase of the new karbanos. And along with the half shekel, under certain circumstances, there was a surcharge known as the kolbon. So for example, let's say someone wanted to give... I want to change. I'm going to give you, you're going to give me half shekel change. I'm going to give you a full shekel. You'll give me half shekel change. So such a person may have to add on a kolbon, the surcharge, because the half shekelim were very popular at that time. They didn't want to give you a half shekel as change. So there would be a kolbon, a surcharge in that circumstance. There may be other cases where you have to add on a kolbon as well. Some claim that every time everyone had to give. Once you gave a machsa shekel, people, because the half shekel coins were very thin, people would not keep them around. They would exchange them. Well, you have to exchange them. You have to pay a money changer to do so. So the Beis HaMikdash now has that obligation, has that responsibility. So there's an extra surcharge, which is actually 120, the kolbon is 1/24th of the value of a half shekel, which is a little bit more that we have to give. So when do you have to give a kolbon? Generally, when you give a half shekel, maybe when you give a whole shekel and you want change. But in Shkolim, in Perek Aleph Mishnah Zayin, we learn that if a person who's giving a shekel on behalf of a poor person, or giving the half shekel for his neighbor as a gift, he doesn't have to give a kolbon. Same thing is true of a father who's giving from his nechasim, his possessions, on behalf of his children, he's giving a half shekel as a gift. He doesn't have to give a kolbon. But if you have partners who are giving their half shekel as one, then they are chayav to give the extra surcharge. So that's with respect to shkolim. Another halach, and we'll see how these are related in a moment, is maser behema. Maser behema, one of every 10 of sheep or cattle have to be given to the Beis HaMikdash, is a korban. It's eaten within the city of Yerushalayim. It's kachim kalim. That's maser behema. What if you have shutvim? What if you have partners? So shutvim, we just said, have to give a kolbon when it comes to shkolim. But when it comes to maser behema, if you have people who own animals as partners, all of the children, all of the offspring of those animals that were born when they were partners do not have to be given as master behemah. So we see that there's a relationship here between shkalim and master behemah. They're completely different areas of halacha, but shutfus, partnership, or lack thereof, plays a role. So the Mishnah here is telling us the following. Ha'achin ha'shutafin. You have brothers, and they split the father's estate, and then they join together as partners. So k'shechayavin b'kolmon, when they're chayav b'kolmon, which means they're partners, they, because they gave a full shekel together as partners, they have to add a surcharge. So since they are partners, and there's a chiyuv of a kolbon, p'turim mimaaseh behemah, that very relationship of partnership makes them exempt of maaseh behemah if they have animals b'shutfus. And the converse, k'shechayavin b'maaseh behemah, p'turim min ha'kolbon. And if they would be chayv in maaser behemah, which means they would not be considered partners, then they would be patur min al kolbon. They wouldn't have to pay a kolbon. So what case is that talking about? So here is where the brothers are at the stage what we call tfisas habayis. The father passed away. They haven't split anything. It's not like they split or split and then became partners again in business. No, they haven't done anything with the estate. The estate is like almost like as if it's still in the father's possession. They haven't split anything. So since they're not partners, and we can view it as if the shekel that's being given is really being given by the father, the deceased father, on behalf of the children, because it's coming from the father's estate. They're not partners. So we know, we mentioned that if a father gives a shekel on behalf of this child, you don't have to pay the surcharge of the kolbon. So these brothers would not have to do so either, because it remains in the tfisas habayis stage of and has not been divided at all. The estate remains as if it belongs to the deceased father still at this point. So there's no kolbon, there's no surcharge, because like a father giving for a son. On the other hand, because they're not shutfim, if they have animals, those animals would be chayav in maser behemah. Then the Mishnah moves on to another area of halacha, which is a father's right to sell his daughter into slavery to make her into an amah ivriya. So the Torah speaks about this in Parshas Mishpatim. Father can sell his daughter as an amah ivriya, and she will go free with simanim. She goes free after 6 years, or with Simon. If she turns 12, she now has those signs of maturity, she goes free. So then, and then is the halacha of knas. Knas is where a nara between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half, discussing Parshas Kiseitze and Parshas Mishpatim, where if a nara is violated by a man or seduced by a man, that man has to pay 50 shekel to the father of that nara, of that 12 to 12 and a half young woman. And the Mishnah here says that kol makom sheyesh mecher, at any stage, age, where there is mecher, where the father has the right to sell his daughter into slavery, which is up until 12, and knas, there would be no payment of knas. If a ktana were seduced or violated, according to the Tana of this mission, which is Rabbi Meir's opinion happens to be, there's no payment of knas. So whenever there's mecher, which means when a girl's a ktana, there will be no knas, because there's no knas when she's violated or seduced when she's a ktana. V'chol makom, there are other payments. V'chol makom sheyesh knas, ein mecher. And the converse is that if any time there is knas, which means she's after 12 already, between 12 and 12 and a half, ein mecher, then it's too late for the father to sell her into slavery. So that's what the Mishnah is saying, this inverse relationship between the mecher and the knas. That when there's mecher up until 12, there's no knas if she's raped or seduced. And if there's knas, which means she's 12, well, there's no mecher at all. Happens to be the chachamim of the opinion against Rabbi Meir that this is not completely true, because there is knas for a girl who's a ktana who was seduced or violated, even if she doesn't have to be a nara, even if she's a ktana. So there's a time, according to the chachamim, that there's both mecher, selling into slavery, and knas. That's when she's a ktana. Then the Mishnah moves on to another area. Halacha is that a father has the right to marry off his daughter when she's a ktana. We don't recommend that. He can marry off when she's a nara as well. But he can marry off when she's a ktana, and the marriage is a marriage doraisa. We need to get in order for her to go free from that marriage. But if the father doesn't marry her off, she's a ketana, she doesn't have the intelligence to be married off herself, but her mother or brother marry her off. That's a kiddushin derabana. And she has the right, doesn't need to get it all, when she's age 12, but not past 12, up until age 12, she has the right, what we call miun. Miun, she can refuse that marriage. So that is something that can be done till age 12, says the Mishnah. Kol makom sheyesh miun ein chalitza. In a case where we spoke about yibam and chalitza, we learned maseches yibamos. So a girl, if it could be that she was married, and there's a case of yibam that happens, her husband passed away, and now there is the deceased brother who wants to do yibam or chalitza. He can't do chalitza because chalitza could only be done to a girl who's of the age of intelligence. She has to be bat mitzvah. So the Mishnah is telling us like this: Kol makom sheyesh miun. Anytime that there is mean that the girl can still refuse, which is up to age 12, there's no chalitza in chalitza. V'chol makom sheyesh chalitza. At the stage where chalitza begins, when she's 12, well, ain't mean. It's too late to do mean. If a girl was married off by her mother or brother, and then by 12 she didn't refuse, and now she's 13, and 14, 15 is married to this man, by that age already, if she wants to leave the marriage, she needs a get. It's too late to do mean. Then the Mishnah speaks about the blowing of the shofar on Erev Shabbos to announce that it's Shabbos, which is what they did. We have a sirens today to announce that in Israel. But this was, the shofar was blown. How many blasts were there? There were six. So the first blast was to remind people who were working out in the fields to stop plowing and doing other malachos in the fields. That was at already at Minchaton. Then the second one was another shofar blast to tell people to close up the stores. And then the third one was very close to Shkia, and that was to tell people to take off their pots that may be on the fire and put on a blech, insulate them, light candles. And then after a short period of time, those were three blasts. Then there was a tkiya, true tkiya, and Shabbos began. So the Mishnah is here to teach us that they blew shofar on Erev Shabbos, even when that Erev Shabbos was a yontif. So Friday were yontif, they blow the shofar also. Why? There needs to be an announcement that you have to stop cooking. People who are cooking on Yontif, I need you to know that there's no Ochel Nefesh anymore. Shabbos is starting soon. So they blow the shofar. And the Mishnah is here to teach us that if you blew the shofar, you wouldn't be making Havdalah. Kol makom sheyesh tkiya ain't Havdalah. If you blow the shofar, you don't make Havdalah. So that means that if I'm blowing the shofar on Yontif that fell out on Friday to announce, stop cooking, Shabbos is starting soon, but that means that there's no Havdalah. Even though there is a difference between Yontif and Shabbos, since Shabbos is a higher level of Kedusha, we don't make Havdalah from Yontif to Shabbos. So when there's blowing of the shofar, Yontif is Erev Shabbos, there's no Havdalah. V'chol makom sheyesh Havdalah, on Motzei Shabbos, when you're making Avdallah, ain't Kiyah. You would not blow the shofar, which means, if I'm making Avdallah, which means it's Saturday night, Yontif's falling out on Sunday, there will be Avdallah, because the greater Kedusha has ended. We have to make a Avdallah for Shabbos, and there's no tkiya though. I don't have to blow the shofar to warn people, oh, Yontif is starting, you have to stop. What do you mean have to stop? It was already Shabbos, I stopped everything. Now at least I could cook. I don't need to blow shofar. So this inverse relationship between the tkiyos and the havdalos. So Yom Tov Shechol Yos Berev, and the Mishnah explains, Yom Tov Shechol Yos Berev Shabbos, Yom Tov falls out on Friday, token of Mavdilin. You blow shofar, you don't make Avdala. But Motzei Shabbos, Mavdilin, we make Avdala, blow token, we don't blow shofar. Case of Mavdilin, what is the Nisach of the Havdala when Yom Tov falls out on Motzei Shabbos? HaMavdil Mikodesh LeKodesh, as we say, Rabbi Dosa Omer, Ben Kodesh Chamur LeKodesh HaKal. Now, you say, everyone agrees that the bracha begins with Baruch Atah Hashem, HaMavdil Mikodesh L'chol Ben Olahoshech, etc. That's how you start the bracha. But the Chasima, the conclusion of the bracha is HaMavdil Mikodesh LeKodesh. Rabbi Dosa says, not Kodesh KaKodesh, you need to identify that Shabbos is more strict. So Ben Kodesh Chamur from the more strict Kodesh, LeKodesh HaKal, of course we know that that is not our nusach.